Coming up on this episode of DL Weekly, new food items coming to DCA, Halloween merch starts to creep in.
Ducks take over It's a Small World. We chat with Don about the Disneyland Hotel and more. DL Weekly starts now.
Hello, everyone. Welcome aboard the DL Weekly podcast. Please lower your head and watch your step while boarding. If this is your first time listening, we hope you'll check out our website at dlweekly.net. If you have more time to spend, becoming an official weekly tier at dlweekly.net/support is an especially good value. Thanks for traveling with us today, and we hope you have a happy and memorable listen to this week's episode.
Hello and welcome to this episode of DL Weekly for the week of July 12th, 2023. I'm Teresa Urban.
And I'm Lynn Barron.
Well, thank you to Marie W. for increasing your support on our Patreon. Our supporters get some pretty fun perks like DL Weekly swag, bonus content, and access to our Discord community. A special thank you to Stephen S., Ashley C., Amy H., and Ashley E. for your continued support. If you would like some more Disney magic in your day, head on over to dlweekly.net/support to join the community. Well, does listening to the show make you want to be in the park? If so, please contact our friends over at Concierge to get your next trip planned. We use them to make our trips truly memorable and hassle-free. If you want that same experience, please head over to concierge.com and chat with them about what your dream Disney vacation looks like.
Now let's get to the news.
Well, the foodie guide has been released for San Francisco Square. The Lucky Fortune Cookery's new menu will be available starting July 19th with Cocina Cucamonga and Rita's Turbine Blenders starting on the 26th. There are so many fun, delicious-looking items on this foodie guide. Okay, we're big foodies here at DL Weekly, Lynn. So is there anything that you saw on this menu that caught your eye? Or that sounds delicious to you?
It all looks like I would like to try. I like this food.
Mm-hmm.
Would it be Chinese food or I don't know what it's
all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, it looks really good. What was that one that looked? It was like a dumpling one. It looked pretty good.
The pot stickers.
Yeah, pot stickers. Yeah,
there's
the pot stickers.
Crispy vegetable and chicken pot stickers. Yes, mm-hmm. Those look delicious. There's a beef bulgogi burrito with seasoned rice, cabbage slaw, and garlic chips. This just, I don't know. It just, this is not stuff you normally see at a theme park food. There's so many vegetables and like fresher options. It's not just like pizza and hamburgers. I'm just so excited. There's a Baymax macaron, which is filled with chocolate hazelnut spread and buttercream. That's going to be at the Lucky Fortune Cookery. That looks absolutely adorable and very, very fun. I know Tag's going to be excited about that when he sees it.
Yeah.
But there's all sorts of, I'm extra excited. My thing is, I get really excited about all the beverages. And there's a ton of new, delicious-looking beverages coming to the area, too. Not just at Rita's, but at all of the different restaurants.
Yeah. There's
a Thai tea with sea salt cream and brown sugar boba. Yum. There's a lychee tea, which is unsweetened black tea and premium lychee syrup with a lychee coconut jelly. Also yum. There's a new cold brew that will be coming eventually, and that's going to be at Aunt Cass's Cafe. It's a specialty caramel cream cold brew that looks super yummy. Joffrey's Coffee caramel mudslide cold brew topped with house-made sea salt caramel whipped cream. Yum.
Wait a minute.
Yum.
Where is this? What did you say? It's at the cafe?
At Aunt Cass's Cafe. So the bakery...
Oh, okay. I was trying to figure
out. Yep, is being transformed into Aunt Cass's Cafe.
Okay.
It looks so fun.
Yeah.
Ooh. But yeah, delicious. Rita's Turbine Blenders also looks like they have a lot of fun alcoholic and non-alcoholic drinks. They're like frozen, slushy, bright, fun colored things. There are some favorites that are returning because I know a lot of people had favorites in this area that they were worried about. But at Aunt Cass's Cafe, they do still have the clam chowder bread bowls and also mac and cheese bread bowls. So some of those favorites stuck around.
Oh, that's where they had like sandwiches and things like that in there. What was, I don't know.
Yep, they're still, and they still have some, there's a turkey pesto club that's going to be there, which I think is something that stayed. And then they also have a new sandwich, a shrimp katsu sandwich that's going to be there as well. I'm just,
wow, a lot.
I just love that there's so many, like, so, it's not just one location got a couple new things. All of the locations are getting new fun things. The other thing I'm excited to try is at Aunt Cass's Cafe, they have a Japanese-style fluffy cheesecake.
Ooh. That just sounds, cheesecake,
It just sounds amazing.
Let me ask you this. Do you think, because this is a ton of menu items, do you think they put out a lot of things and then kind of see what people like and don't like and then kind of weed it out as
that
time
could
goes.
Be. Yeah. Yeah, that could be. I don't remember. I didn't frequent like Lucky Fortune Cookery or Cocina Cucamonga often enough to know how many items were on their menus before. So I don't know if this is similar or maybe they're just putting out a couple things and maybe one or two of these things will not be as popular, and so maybe they won't stick around. That's an interesting thought. Yeah. But I don't know.
It's just a ton of stuff. So
it is a lot of food.
And that's one thing I noticed with Disney, especially after the parks reopened, was that a lot of the menus were smaller. You know, menu choices.
Yeah.
Cool.
But I'm really excited. This is going to be like for me. Once I get into this area, I think I'm going to have a hard time picking what I want to eat during the day. I'm really glad because to me it felt like I didn't have very many favorite food locations in DCA, so I think this was really needed. I think Pim did a nice job and expanded, and I enjoy that's one of my new favorites. Of course, Lamplight Lounge is wonderful as well.
I love that.
But there wasn't as many counter quick service kind of style places that I like really went out of my way because I enjoyed them. So I'm very excited for this refresh in this.
And very unique stuff. You can't get this stuff anywhere else. I mean,
that's true. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If you want some of these things, you got it. You have to go to San Francisco. You can't get something kind of like Bengal Barbecue. Like it's a very unique menu to that location. And there's, there's not really, really similar things. If you want that thing, that's where you got to go.
Right.
So I'm excited. Good.
Cool. Attention, foolish mortals. The Haunted Mansion will be closing on August 14th for its transformation into the Haunted Mansion Holiday. We can't wait to see what Jack and his friends have planned.
They had been teasing little bits about the gingerbread house and what it may look like this year. There was like two little hints. Nothing since those two hints. And I'm just so excited. The gingerbread house is the, I don't want to say the best part, but it's the most, it's the thing I look most forward to each year with the Haunted Mansion transformation. There was a time that each year when Haunted Mansion Holiday came, they would have new things added, like maybe new characters, new details, that sort of thing. I don't feel like we've gotten any new characters or, details in it, but for sure, every year that ginormous, amazing gingerbread takes shape and is its own unique reincarnation every year. So I'm very excited to see what they have planned for the gingerbread house.
Well, isn't it the Nightmare Before Christmas, the movie, isn't it some kind of anniversary this year, 30 or 25 or something?
Yeah, it's the 30th. 30-year anniversary for the Nightmare Before Christmas this year, yep.
So maybe that could be a small hint. I don't know, because they want to celebrate that, maybe.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll have like a full diorama of like Halloween Town or something. Who knows?
Oh, wow.
But I'm excited. The Haunted Mansion Holiday will reopen in its corrupted state on September 1st is when Halloween Time starts.
So just 2 weeks.
So not too long.
Yeah.
It feels like a long time, but not too terribly long.
Now, I don't want to ask, do you like this version better than original, because I don't know. Everyone has their choices, but I just want to say, like, do you, are you a big fan of this version of Haunted Mansion?
I do enjoy this version. Yeah. I Haunted Mansion is my favorite attraction. The Nightmare Before Christmas is, I've always really, really liked that movie. So the fact that they kind of mesh the two together. When I was younger and was just learning about Disneyland and liked that movie, I remember when I first learned that this attraction existed and my mind was just blown. I was just like, what? So for a long time, it was like this thing. Because, of course, living in the Midwest, I couldn't it's Halloween time. Well, no, like it was... I remember the first time we went and I was just beside myself. I thought it was so, so cool.
Are you a fan of the movie Nightmare Before?
Yes, I am a fan of the movie. If we would have maybe had Toontown not made it, if they didn't refresh it and they were going to do something else, I thought it would have been really cool if they would have had, of course, like a villain themed area, but if not a villain themed area, if they would have had Halloween Town back there, they would have had like a Nightmare Before Christmas themed area back there. What I thought that would have been super cool.
I would have loved that. Yeah, I love the movie. We watch it at least once or twice during this season. I think we do like Halloween time, like October or September, October, and then we do again during Christmas.
Same. I just awesome. And it's something, the story, the music, but also the artistry of the puppeteering is just incredible. When I was young and they had the DVD came out and they had the behind the scenes, I'd watch the movie and then I'd sit there and watch all of the behind the scenes making of every single time I watched it. Like, it was just, to me, that was just like part two of the movie.
Do you consider it a Halloween movie or a Christmas movie?
Both. Probably more Halloween because it's more spooky and it's like the spooky world trying to figure out the Christmas holiday world, but probably if I had to put it in here or there, I'd probably say Halloween, but I'm like same. You and I watch it for both.
Awesome.
Well, speaking of Halloween, more merch has started to materialize around the resort. There's new Haunted Mansion merch that's available on Shop Disney and around the parks. In addition, The Nightmare Before Christmas, as we mentioned, is celebrating its 30th anniversary this year. And new merch celebrating our favorite residents of Halloween Town is also available. And there's a ton of new merch for both The Haunted Mansion and Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah, I was looking at that and I went, oh, no.
So much. Like, I feel like each year the Haunted Mansion has been getting a lot of love and a lot of merch. So it's always amazing to me that year after year they come out with more and more and more. Because each year they kind of do a different style. This year's kind of more of a, I don't know, kind of cartoony. But the colors are very vibrant.
Can you see me wearing this blazer? That would be...
the wallpaper blazer is that glows in the dark. Heck yeah, Lynn.
That would be awesome.
That's so cool. I feel like that blazer is going to sell out pretty fast.
I think so.
I did not check on Shop Disney how much it is, but I'm sure it's not very inexpensive. Oh, here we go. The blazer is $69.99, but it glows in the dark, so priorities, cool. You know. But yeah, like just a ton. There's button-ups, there's t-shirts, there's multiple t-shirts, there's pajama set, there's a Madame Leota soap dispenser. So it looks like the Madame Leota in the crystal ball, but it's, you know, like a soap dispenser for your sink. There's hats. There's the new ears, instead of having a bow, has the kind of evil eyes from the wallpaper.
More ears for you, Teresa.
More ears.
The magic band's cool. The hat box. The magic band's,
yeah. Very, very cool. New Crocs, so fans of Crocs can have new Haunted Mansion Crocs. Just tons of stuff. And stuff for all different things to wear, all different parts of your house. There's Madame Leota and Haunted Mansion themed like hand towels. So I don't know if you'd put those in your kitchen or your bathroom or both. But yeah, just so trinket trays, cookie jars, pins, of course.
What is that crazy little... fun. What are those little... Oh, the lounge fly. Yeah, the back. That's pretty cool. There's so many things.
I just realized there's a new dress that's not quite the... It's still the wallpaper print, not quite the same color scheme as the blazer, but there's a a dress that has a collar that says Tomb Sweet Tomb on the collar, but the dress also glows in the dark. The dress is giving me Wednesday Addam vibes, though, with the high white collar.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I hadn't seen it yet, but now okay. Yeah, it does.
Scroll all the way down to where that was. There's a Hatbox Ghost spirit jersey.
Yeah.
So many things. We haven't even gotten down to the... Oh, here we are. I'm finally to the Nightmare Before Christmas stuff. So there's some items that we've seen before. There's different plushes. There's a Jack plush and a Sandy Claus plush and a Sally plush. I don't know if I've seen the Oogie Boogie and the Santa Claus plushes before, but also lots of different jackets and hoodies, bags.
The diffuser's cool, that little diffuser.
The frog's breath diffuser is so cool.
I would love that in my office.
Cool. I think that is so, so cool. There's this really cool t-shirt that I want. I'm hoping it's not. Sometimes I really like t-shirts and then I find out that it's the kid's shirt. So I'm hoping that this is not the case, but they have a Lock, Shock, and Barrel t-shirt that's gray and parts of it, I think, glow in the dark too.
Oh, yeah.
So many good things.
Too many. Wow. So all this is available right now, huh?
This is available now. Yeah. This is in the parks. This is and on Shop. Some of it's on Shop Disney, but yeah, a lot of it's in the parks. I enjoy there's an Oogie Boogie baseball cap. It's like neon green with his face on it, and then there's bugs on the bill of the hat. Just very fun.
Wow. I hope some of this is still there when I get there at the end of November.
I know sometimes it's hard because they put this stuff out so early that it sometimes sells out before the holiday. And if you're after even before the holiday, you're out of luck trying to get some of this stuff.
Yeah.
We ran into that when we were there in December once. All of the holiday time stuff was so popular and already off the shelves. So even though you were there in December, there was very little merch to kind of to choose through, and we'd seen how many awesome things there were. So it's tough.
It is. Mice Chat shared some rumors of some new character meet and greets that might come to the parks for Halloween time. To celebrate the release of the new Haunted Mansion movie, Rosario Dawson's character Gabby and the Hatbox Ghost are rumored to be coming to the parks. Also, there are whispers of more Nightmare Before Christmas characters like the Mayor, Lock, Shock, and Barrel stopping by the parks as well.
Again, we cannot stress enough, these are rumors. Rumors. We usually don't report on rumors, but I thought these were really exciting. If it ends up being true, I could see this happening because, like we've mentioned, it's the 30th anniversary for The Nightmare Before Christmas, and it's been crazy popular at the parks.
Yeah.
But then also, we've seen a lot of promotion for the new films and new TV shows right away, so I could see them having these characters from the film and from the attraction doing meet and greets early
to kind of promote that. Yeah.
Get that synergy going. So I hope, my fingers are crossed, that these are true. Can you imagine the Hatbox Ghost would be so cool?
I can't imagine. Yeah. So that would be cool. Wonder where they're going to be. I mean, if they were to do this.
Right. I could see Gabby and the Hatbox Ghost maybe meeting over where Jack and Sally usually meet, which is in between.
By the fountain, kind of?
Yeah. By the
fountain.
Over in between the two shops where was it, the Pirate Arcade used to be. I could see them maybe being in that space.
Yeah.
Same with Lock, Shock, and Barrel and the Mayor. I could see Hatbox and Gabby being
more towards the mansion?
Yeah. More earlier in the year, because that's coming out at the end of this month, that movie.
And then
maybe the Halloween Town residents don't show up until closer to Halloween time.
Oh, that makes sense,
Or they just rotate in the same spot. Who knows?
Not a ton of room over there.
No,
not a lot of room.
Maybe some of them will be at the Oogie Boogie Bash. That could be another possibility, too.
That's true, It didn't say where, just said there.
It just said it's a rumor. It might happen, and I'm very excited about it. I hope it comes true.
Okay. I hope so, too.
speaking of synergy and newer characters that we're seeing on the screens coming to the parks, a Skrull was spotted at the Hyperion Theater this past week. This was a very fun cross-promotion for the new Marvel series, Secret Invasion, which, if you have not started watching this, do yourself a favor and watch it. It is surprisingly good. I didn't know that this was even coming. I somehow this was under the radar for me.
Yeah.
And Vern and I just happened to turn on Disney Plus the day the first episode dropped. So we're like, oh, this looks cool. And we've been hooked. We've been hooked ever since. I think we're only three episodes in right now. So it's still newer. So if you haven't watched any of them yet, you can catch up pretty quickly. But it's been very, very good.
Oh, good. You know, it's on our list, but we just haven't started it yet.
Sure. We've really, really enjoyed it. In fact, Philander posted something about it on his Instagram, and I messaged him. I'm like, it's so good. It's so good. He's like, I know, and people don't know. Like, it's just, yeah, it's so good. Okay. Somehow this one's just kind of, I don't know. It didn't get quite the promotion or the hype before it released, and I have not really heard anybody talking about it since it released, but it's been very, very enjoyable. I've liked it a lot. So, for those of you that don't know, the Skrulls are an alien race that we met, I want to say it was in Captain Marvel, and they're trying to find a new home planet, and Captain Marvel and Nick Fury promised them that they would help them find a new home. Wow. Well, Secret Invasion is kind of this fast forward, I don't remember how many years it's been since they've been trying to find them a new home. They still haven't found them a home, but the species can actually camouflage themselves. So their natural state is they're kind of green, they're dark green skin, bald, kind of like more bigger ears.
Yeah.
But they can camouflage themselves and they can look like anybody. So they can look like you, they could look like me, or they're kind of like a chameleon a little bit in that way. So the Secret Invasion is there's all of these Skrulls are on Earth, but it's a secret invasion because you don't know who's a Skrull necessarily and who's not a Skrull because they all look like humans. So it's been very interesting. So the Skrull that was spotted at the Hyperion Theater was in his natural state, and he was wearing like it looked like a one of the theater uniforms, and he had a cast member name badge on. So I thought,
I saw that. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I thought it was really, really fun.
I didn't know who that was because I hadn't seen the show, and I thought, what is going on here? Okay.
Yep. Makes sense. That's what it is. He's a Skrull. Very fun.
I like that. During the month of July, Magic Key holders can receive a special commemorative button. The button is an extra gift to key holder that book and participate in Walt's Main Street Story guided tour. Check out the Magic Key portal in the Disneyland app for more details.
I'm a sucker for a button. I don't know why these are always so exciting to me, these fun little buttons that they give out. But this is a guided tour. I want to say it's like a two, maybe 3 hour long tour. About $150, $160 for the tour. So it is more expensive, and that's in addition to your park ticket. But you get to kind of walk down Main Street and kind of take a walk in Walt's footsteps. And I want to say the tour ends at Walt's apartment, which is magical in and of itself. So, but this is just a little extra, a little extra magic for magic key holders that sign up to do this tour.
Sounds good. You said, so the button is just for people that go on that.
Yes. Yep. So magic key holders that go on this tour will get an extra button.
Cool.
Very cool.
Well, that sounds good. Yeah. I've been to Walt's apartment once.
Lucky. That's still on my list. My ever-growing Disney bucket list of amazing things I want to see and experience.
We were working and the manager said, hey, we have a VIP coming and they want the apartment clean. Check the patio for leaves and just make sure there's nothing on the floor in there and maybe run a vacuum over it real quick. So, okay. So me and a friend went up there and it was just us. There was no one with us watching us or anything. It was just us. So it was really cool. So we got to kind of nose around a little bit. I was looking at things and it was really cool. And that's to be up on the patio up there and look over everyone, it was really neat. So we were up there for, I don't know, 15 minutes, but it was cool.
Oh, I would have taken my time cleaning if that were me. I got to get every little speck of dust. It'll be about an hour or so.
This was before cell phones, so I didn't have like a phone on me or anything.
Right. You know? Very cool, though. That's a really cool experience, though.
Yeah.
Well, a small but super exciting detail has been added to the Disneyland park maps. Tiana's Bayou Adventure is now officially on the map. Disney has updated the map on the app right after Splash Mountain's last day, but now the printed park maps match. Tiana's Bayou Adventure, of course, is scheduled to open sometime in 2024.
Sounds good.
I don't know why. I just think it's neat that they do something when these areas are under construction. So it's not just this. Nothing to see here, you know.
Right.
I think it's fun.
No, it's cool. Yeah, they're moving right in there. Mm-hmm. Moving along. The annual cast member duck race took place in Disneyland this past week. Hundreds of decorated rubber ducks raced around the Small World attraction. The event took place at 6 a.m. before the parks opened to guests for the day.
This is wild. I have a link in the show notes to the article from the Orange County Register. And they have photos from the event because, of course, you know, us non-cast members can't ever experience this. But it just looks so fun. They have all the ducks in the water ready to go. But they've got this net in front of them. So, you know, when it's time to go, everybody's kind of got a fair shot to go. It said it took about 15 minutes for the first ducks to get all the way around.
Oh,
but I just... The cast members, there's different categories, so they decorate their ducks. So it can be like the most Disney duck or like a duck that represents what your role is. And, you know, also they have different awards for different ducks. And they're very creative. Very, very creative.
Yeah, I have a friend that participated and he said it's a lot of fun.
So, yeah. Going to say, did you ever get to participate when you were there?
They didn't have that going when I think it started after. Yeah.
Dang. You could have had like a little custodial duck that you made.
I know, right?
Very awesome.
DL Weekly announces the boarding of the Trivia Express, nonstop star speeder service to the moon of Endor. All passengers, please prepare for immediate boarding.
Welcome to Trivia Land. How are we feeling tonight? You kind of got a sneak peek last week. You kind of know the subject matter we're coming into this week. You feeling pretty confident?
No, I'm a terrible person because I already forgot what our hint was from last week. So I clearly didn't study.
And how about you, Lynn? Have you been studying? Do you even remember?
No, I don't.
We're very honest here in Trivia Land.
All right. Well, then. To refresh your memory, last week we had listener-submitted questions from Kayla Jean and her 2.5-year-old son.
Yes.
They had done a deep dive into the Tiki Room and sent me so many questions that rather than spreading them out over months and months and making them wait to hear their questions, I decided that I appreciated their deep dive so much that I was going to use them all at once, but I had to spread them over 2 episodes rather than blasting you with 10 questions all at a time.
Okay.
So, we are now in episode 2 and finishing up on the last 4 of their questions. And then because I was enjoying the deep dive so much, I threw in a bonus question of my own. So, are we ready for some more Tiki Room questions?
We're ready.
Courtesy of Kayla Jean and 2.5-year-old son. As we all know, Dole is the sponsor of the Enchanted Tiki Room. And, of course, Teresa is a fan of the Dole Whip. What year did they sign on as the sponsor for the attraction, and what sponsor did they replace?
Oh, man.
It was later than you think. I know that. And I think it was it TWA that was...
I was going to say, I thought it was something to do with, like, traveling.
Yeah.
I remember that. I couldn't remember if it was like, state of Hawaii or, like, a travel company that... You could then book to go visit Hawaii.
That was an airline.
Maybe. But fly to go see Hawaii.
Yeah. So, okay. So you wanted the year first. TWA for that part. And then the year, I'm going to take a big guess because I don't know the exact year. I'm going to say 1981.
I was thinking the 80s too. I'm going to go... I'll do 1986.
Yeah.
I think now that you said TWA, I think that's right.
Sounds right.
Gosh,
to me.
I really feel It was some. It was for sure something to do with like traveling, like so that you could go visit Hawaii. I'm gonna jump on that bandwagon and go TWA with you, Lynn.
Okay.
All right. So that was 1986 in TWA and 1981 in TWA. Final answers.
Final.
All right. Who composed the songs for the Tiki Room?
The Sherman Brothers.
Sherman Brothers. Robert and Richard. Richard Sherman.
Robert and Richard.
Both of you saying the Sherman Brothers. Mm-hmm. Final answer.
Yes. Yeah.
Final. I'm confident in that one.
Confident. Yes. Yes. Very quick and confident from both of you. All right. And your third listener submitted question. What is the runtime of the Tiki Room show?
The current?
We'll go with current.
Okay, because it's changed.
Within a minute.
Within a minute.
I'll give you some grace period.
I'm going to say 17 minutes and 30 seconds.
17:30?
Mm-hmm.
My gut was 17, so I'll stick with 17.
All right, so 17 minutes and 17 minutes, 30 seconds. Final answers?
Final.
All righty. And your final listener-submitted question. How many audio animatronics are in the show?
Oh. This is going to sound... I think it's 225.
Are you sure?
It's just reading something.
Okay.
About this, because it was the 60th anniversary.
225. So that's the other thing is audio animatronics. Sometimes people say like the Jungle Cruise, but those are mechanical and not audio animatronics.
Yep.
Hmm.
So everything in that room that's synced to music. But the hard thing is, right? You've got flowers. So each flower is its own separate.
Oh, true.
I would think like the birds of paradise that are on the wall, even though they're in a clump, I would say that it's, you know, however many is in that clump, 5 or, you know, whatever. Then you've got, like, the boats of flowers that come down that are
Mm-hmm.
You know?
The drummers. There's two in
the
each.
Drummers.
Two in each thing. So that's
you've
8.
You've got the guys in the posts that come alive.
225 seems high, though. I'm trying to. I'm going to go with 72.
72?
Yeah.
All right, so answers of 225 and 72. Final answers.
Final.
All right. And your bonus question from my enjoying of the deep dive. The audio animatronics were so incredible by 1963 standards, a Barker bird was stationed outside the attraction to draw huge crowds and pique the interest of parkgoers. What was his name?
Wasn't it Juan?
Oh, I think so, yeah.
I'm pretty sure, and he was related to Jose, maybe Jose's cousin.
Yeah, we'll go with that. Because I don't know.
You sound very confident, Lynn.
I don't know the name. I just called it Barker Bird. I don't know the name.
Yeah, the Barker Bird. Honestly, full transparency, it was that pin. They had that pin released recently.
Oh, that's right.
And that's where Juan is, like, that's where I got Juan from, I'm pretty sure. I could be completely wrong
on that one.
But that's where my memory's landing right now. It's from that very cool pin.
Okay. I'm going with you on that.
All right. So both of you saying Juan. Mm-hmm. Final answer.
Final.
All right. Well, listeners, how do you feel about their knowledge of Tiki Room? Knowledge. How was your knowledge listening at home? Stick around until after the discussion topic and we can all find out together.
Well, this week we have a very special guest with us. We have Don Ballard, who is an author and Disney historian who knows probably everything and anything one would want to know about the Disneyland Hotel. And we're just so excited to have you on with us. So welcome, Don.
Thank you. I'm just as excited.
I was telling Don, I had to tell him that I have one of his books right here with me, and it's amazing, and it's gorgeous, and I can't wait to hear more from you and kind of how you got into this and your wild adventures with all of this history.
All right. I love talking about this.
Perfect. Well, before we get into that, we want to kind of get to know you a little bit more and kind of what got you into this and what kind of started your passions with Disney in general. So can you tell us your Disney story?
Sure thing. I've been a Walt Disney fan and a Disneyland fan for a number of years. But what got me started in this book project was, I think it was 1995 or 1996, my wife and I had checked into the Disneyland Hotel, and we were being led to our room by a bellman who had been there since 1968. Wow. His name was Mike Connors, and he said, you know, nobody's ever written anything about the Disneyland Hotel. They always write about Disneyland, but they have never written anything about the Disneyland Hotel. And I kind of had a bucket list item in college of things that I wanted to accomplish. And one of those was to write a book. And so I kind of planted that seed and I said, by golly, I'm going to start assembling stuff on this place and I'm going to write a book. And it just kind of took off from there.
That's so cool. That's so cool. It's such a magical place. It really is. Like, of all the Disney hotel properties, it's always been my favorite. I've always been drawn to the Disneyland Hotel. I don't know what it is about it, but it's like an extension of Disneyland, I guess, is the best way to describe the feeling. So that's so cool that your first visit, you got to meet someone that had been there for so long and got to experience it through all of its different phases and changes and all of the cool stuff.
Yeah. And another thing too, it's the original, like Disneyland, yeah. You know, Walt Disney walked those grounds and Walt Disney had some input on how that place was going to be built. Although nothing is still remains that's of the original, but Walt had direct impact on that. And it was the flagship hotel, the grandmother or grandfather of them all. And, you know, everything that was after that was kind of patterned on ideas from that. So, mm-hmm. So it's a really historically significant place.
Mm-hmm. When entering Disneyland on the first day of a visit, which way do you go? Left towards Adventureland, through the castle to Fantasyland, or right into Tomorrowland?
I usually take the monorail. So I'm in Tomorrowland. You know, we leave the hotel and we get on the monorail. The times that we do walk, the first thing that I have to do when I get to Disneyland is go on Pirates. That's the very first thing that I have to do. Because if the whole rest of the day fails, I've at least ridden Pirates.
That's very true. Tag and I, when we go, always go to the left as well. And there was one time we didn't do that and we felt so discombobulated the rest of the day. I don't know why it makes a difference, but it's like you're like, well, at least I've checked these things off. So we were like, okay, we've checked off at Indiana, we've checked off Pirates, and we've checked off Haunted Mansion. Those are like our three musts. Once we've done that, we feel like we can breathe, and then it's like, oh, I don't care where we go now.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny. Kind of like I kind of do the clockwise kind of thing, you know? So I start off at, 9 o'clock? And, you know, and then move to 10 o'clock and Haunted Mansion and then, you know, proceed around that way. Mm-hmm. And usually we're shopping, you know, by the end of the evening on Main Street or we're over in Tomorrowland, you know, picking up the monorail again to take us back to the hotel.
There you go. Perfect. So you may have already told us, but what is your favorite attraction? And even though, yes, this is a Disneyland-centered podcast, you can choose any attraction from any of the parks, and you can even choose attractions that are no longer in parks and in Yesterland, if you would like.
Okay. I like Everest Adventure at Walt Disney World.
Yes.
I love that. And I've actually been blessed a couple of times to where they let me ride it twice in a row. Because there was nobody in the queue or in the line.
Yeah.
And so they just said, you want to stay on? And I said, is this a trick question? Yes, I would like to stay on. But I would have to say at Disneyland, I do love Pirates, but I love Peter Pan. I absolutely love that. I'm an originalist kind of guy. I like things that Walt had a direct hand in. and some of the original attractions, even though, you know, they've been updated through the years and modernized and things, I'm still a big fan of the original attractions that were there.
Couldn't agree more. There's just,
yeah.
And I don't know what it is, but it just feels like there's extra magic there. It's just a different creative touch. Just different. It's just different somehow, and I don't know how you bottle that and how you continue that forever, but they're just timeless.
Yep, timeless. You hit the nail right on the head. They're just timeless. I can come home and watch Peter Pan, the movie, you know, 5 times a month, and I still enjoy it.
Yeah.
You know, and some of the other vintage stuff that's on Disney Plus, I really enjoy that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I am right there with you. So, well, thank you for answering all of our fun little getting to know you questions. But now we get to jump into the part that I'm the most excited about, the Disneyland Hotel. Lynn knows this. Don, you don't know this, but I actually just got married at the Disneyland Hotel last year. That was like top of my list of where I wanted to go. Because again, it's just magical. It's just so beautiful. And we had such a great time. That was the first time I got to stay at the Disneyland Hotel as well. So yeah, it's just amazing. So I love it, and I love history. So I'm just so excited to hear more details from you about the place. So when was it again that you said was the first time you stayed at the hotel?
Oh, first of all, congratulations on getting married.
Yeah, thank you.
You know, the problem that I had is I live in Northern California. I live a little bit south of San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And we have relatives that are right down there in and around Disneyland. In fact, I have cousins that worked there for a number of years. So we always stayed with them, you know, when I was little. We never needed to stay at a hotel around there. Mm-hmm. So my first time that I ever really remember staying at the Disneyland Hotel probably was in the late 70s or the early 80s. Mm-hmm. And I stayed there, which was right when it was still owned by the Rather Corporation rather than Disney. You know, they were still running it, and there were all kinds of things there that are no longer there, the marina and the garden villas and things like that. So I think it was the late 70s or early 80s that I stayed, that I can remember being the first time. I might have stayed there when I was real little, but knowing my parents, they would have stayed at a place that was a dollar cheaper or something, you know, because sure. It was always like a dollar more than the other ones. And also it was always booked. So, mm-hmm. you know, they probably would have stayed at something we could have just walked across the street, you know, to go to.
Well, and the thing too, we've had people tag, he grew up in California too. He didn't like, he has memories of going, yes, to Disneyland growing up, but specifically lots of memories of visiting the hotel, not as a guest, but just as someone there to like enjoy the grounds. It was almost like a destination in and of itself, really.
Yep. That's what they tried to do. When it was owned by the Rather Corporation, they weren't necessarily in competition with Disney. Mm-hmm. They were, the best way I can describe it is, and I hope people get this significance because I'm dating myself, but it was probably the Ed McMahon to Johnny Carson or the Tonto sure. mm-hmm. to the Lone Ranger. Yeah. You know, mm-hmm. Tonto knew that he wasn't the headliner, but Tonto did everything he could to be as cool and friendly and everything as possible. Yeah. Well, the hotel did the same thing. They wanted a trip. They wanted you to be immersed in the Disney magic from the second you checked in. So you didn't even have to really go to the park to already start feeling really special or really unique. You were staying at the Disneyland Hotel. You know, the main event was about to come. You were about to, you know, either take the tram or the monorail or walk over to Disneyland. But it was quite an opening act.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Definitely. And the thing, too, that we have to keep in mind and kind of remember is this was unique. This was not, I mean, there's themed hotels, Disney hotels all over the world now, but there was nothing like this before. And this kind of was, like you said, the first of its kind and like the whatever grandmother, grandfather for all the things to come. Because without the Disneyland Hotel, we wouldn't have things like Alani, or we wouldn't have things like the Contemporary. This kind of paved the way and was the start of all of these immersive experiences. Even the Galactic Star Cruiser, even though, yes, that is not going to be around much longer, but still, like, would those hotel-type experiences have existed without the Disneyland Hotel being the start?
Not only that, you're absolutely correct, but it was also the precursor for many things that happened later at Disneyland. Like, they had a thing called Dancing Waters. That was precursor to Fantasmic, which, you know, could the World of Color. And they had the tunnels underneath was the Sierra Tower. And then they built an expansive tunnel system at Disney World, you know, so there, and then the solar panels, they were the first hotel to have solar panels. And pretty soon all the Disney hotels had solar panels. So they were kind of like the drawing board or the cutting edge for hotel technology or entertainment, you know, that was there. A water themed marina, you know, like at Epcot, or, you know, some of the other things that I mentioned, they used the Disneyland Hotel, and they learned from that to bring these things to the parks as well. Mm-hmm. And then, like you said, the other parks, you know, when they opened up theirs, they learned a lot from the successes of the Disneyland Hotel, and it made them even more. They had all that, you know, tribal knowledge before that to where those would even hit the ground running at being successful. Mm-hmm. So it was a precursor to a lot of activities and a lot of further developments in the Disney resorts.
And you didn't even have to stay at the hotel to enjoy, because I grew up in Southern California and I couldn't always go to Disneyland, but I could always go to the Disneyland Hotel and still have that experience. There was still plenty to do there, plenty to eat and shop and experience without even staying at the, I took many dates, well, not many, but a few dates there. Yeah.
Yeah. One of my most memorable experiences and one of my most enjoyable experiences was my wife and I were at the Disneyland Hotel, and this is, I'm going to say 1997, before Downtown Disney and California Adventure.
Oh, sure.
And we were just kind of strolling the grounds at the hotel, and we sat down. We had, I think, a pot fudge sundae or something, and we sit down, and all of a sudden, this band comes up, and the name is... I can't remember their names right now, but they came up and it was this beautiful summer evening with a little breeze. It was a little warm, but there was the perfect breeze, the sunset, the palm trees. And this band comes up and they said, "We're taking requests." And so I said, "Do you know Whale of a Tale from 20,000 Leagues?" And they knew it. And so we're there in this gorgeous setting with this beautiful sunset and palm trees and a hot fun Sunday and the girl of my dreams and singing Whale of a Tale with this band. And it just doesn't get any better than that. I mean, it was like the perfect elements, you know, all coming together, but there were tons of things like that there. They had free, you know, bands out on the wharf and entertainers and Dancing Waters. And then, you know, they had the Monorail Cafe. You can go get a milkshake or a cheeseburger. They had restaurants for every kind of budget. Plenty of stuff that you could do just walking around. The landscaping was fabulous and fantastic. You know, they had pictures on the walls that relished in history and things like that. And it was just a lot of fun, like you said. And it was a cheap date because, you know, I don't know if you've seen the Behind the Attractions episode of the Disneyland Hotel, but Dave Taranchi mentions that he grew up in Southern California too. And he said, "That was a cheap date bringing a girl to see the Dancing Waters, you know, show. 'Cause I didn't have to pay anything. You know, sometimes even parking was free, you know, you could take them to see that show." And it was just a wonderful way to spend an evening.
And the waterfalls too.
The waterfall. Yeah, absolutely. You know, you could feed the koi fish, you know, there were plenty of romantic spots to bring your significant other in the waterfall area. They had the Rose Garden and the gazebo. They had, you know, all kinds of fun things to do. Yeah. The food was good. Even the shops, you know, they had shops that you could go get coffee, candy, food, souvenirs, and you didn't even have to go into Disneyland. So it was kind of like a trip to a Disney themed attraction without having to spend the big bucks, you know, on getting a ticket to go in.
Yeah.
Incredible. The other thing too is, we'll back up a little and go to the beginnings of the hotel, because I think that's a pretty amazing story too, because of course Walt was trying to build his dream park, and of course money was tight, but he also wanted a hotel, so he had to try and find investors. And so he partnered, were they neighbors?
Well, you know, there are a lot of things that are out there that are kind of folklore.
Sure.
And one of those is that Walt went to his good friend Jack Rather.
Mm-hmm.
I spoke to the surviving Rather children, and I don't want to destroy any, you know, feel good myths or whatever, but they all told me they don't ever recall doing anything socially with the Disneys.
Mm.
In my research, it was basically a business deal. You hit it right on the head. Walt was out of money. He wanted a hotel on the property. And one of the main reasons why he needed an upscale hotel was so that people would stay overnight and visit Disneyland more than one day.
Oh.
So they would buy 2 and 3 day, you know, passes and tickets and ticket books and everything to get into Disneyland. And that was tremendously responsible. The Disneyland Hotel and Jack Rather were tremendously responsible for the attendance figures and the success of Disneyland, which is why I'm trying to get him a window on Main Street.
But
anyway, that was one of the things that he went to his good friend Walt. And this is not to say that Walt was a bad guy or anything, but Walt didn't have a lot of good friends because he was so busy and so immersed in his work. He had friends and acquaintances at work that he loved talking to and doing things with, but not a lot of, you know, like good friends that the family would go out to dinner and, you know, socialize and things like that. He was involved with his family and would take his girls and everything to different places. But they didn't know each other socially. The other myth is that several other hotel chains turned this down, that they didn't want it because they thought that it wouldn't be successful. They thought that he was building this thing out in the middle of the nowhere and the hotel would be out in this thing that was in the middle of nowhere. There were actually 4 or 5 people. I don't know specific names. I've heard it was Marriott. I've heard it was Hilton or Sheraton. I can't remember specifically. That definitely wanted in on building a hotel there. But Jack Rather, through his connections with the Lone Ranger program that he owned and produced, that was on ABC, and the Disneyland television series was on ABC. So through their connections through ABC, they came together. The Disney company was introduced to the Rather company, and Jack had money. And the one thing that I've noticed through my research is that Jack Rather and Walt Disney, they had a lot of similarities. They both had young families. They both were risk takers. They both sunk a lot of money into a venture, you know, that was out in the middle of nowhere and kind of lived out their dreams. But they both wanted a place where families could go to and have fun times and smiles and creating memories, you know, that they would remember for the rest of their lives. Walt was a visionary. Jack was a visionary. Walt, of course, to a much, much greater degree. But I don't have a lot of documentation showing that they had done much prior to the Disney company getting a hold of the Rather company to build the hotel. Walt was far too busy and things to have, you know, real close friends. He had friends and everything that he did stuff with, but he mostly, you know, did things with his family. And they weren't close friends like the myths or the rumors. And I don't want to dispel any happy, you know, warm, fuzzy feelings and everything.
Yeah.
Jack Rather, through his connections at ABC, Jack owned the Lone Ranger and Lassie television shows and Sergeant Preston of the Yukon. And his connections through ABC, which the Lone Ranger ran on, got them together to talk. And there was a gentleman named David A. Brown that got the parties together to say, "We don't have money. You have money." You know, the third thing was they said Jack had no hotel experience. He owned two other hotels before he owned the Disneyland Hotel. He owned La Horizon in Palm Springs and the Twin Lakes Lodge in Las Vegas.
Okay.
And I was just informed the other day from the old president of the Disneyland Hotel that it's L'Horizon. It's not La Horizon. He said everybody's been pronouncing it wrong. But Jack did have hotel experience. So he knew how to operate, run, develop, and build big, work on a hotel.
Mm-hmm.
So that was to his benefit. But it was mainly the ABC connections that got him the contract to build the hotel. He also agreed that, you know, he would run things by Disney before he would put anything in. And they had a amicable, just a wonderful, wonderful relationship all the way through Walt's passing. They had one argument in that whole time, and that's when they put the words Hotel Disneyland, because it said Hotel Disneyland instead of Disneyland Hotel at the top for mm-hmm. a couple of years. And Disney did not like them because you could see that from within Disneyland. But when they built New Orleans Square and stuff, that covered that up. So, but that was the only thing where I saw, hey, why did you do that? And, you know, we're not happy and things. But everything else was, you know, wonderful correspondences back and forth between Roy O. And Walt Disney and Jack Rather and the Rather Corporation. It was a great team together project to get those done.
That's the other thing, too, that I just find amazing is that Walt and the Disney company trusted this third party. I mean, really, because their name was on his hotel, you know, and so it was a reflection of them. And I think the Rather family did a very nice job. I don't think there was any, like, they didn't tarnish the name, nothing, but it could have gone really bad. You know, it's just amazing to me because now, you know, Disney, you don't get to just use Disney's name because they're very, very protective of it, rightfully so. But so it's just amazing to me that they made that deal that they made when they made it. And wasn't it something like crazy that he had those rights for like a ridiculous amount of time? Like that it wouldn't have expired yet amount of time.
99 years. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
2054. But yeah. you hit it right on the head. Jack Rather was very conscientious mm-hmm. of creating this magical image, you know, before you got to Disneyland, that people would be immersed in this atmosphere and in this environment so that your stay was complete. You were not only going to the Magic Kingdom, but you were staying at, you know, the world's most exciting hotel, the Magical mm-hmm. Hotel as well. And he was very conscientious about what he would put in there. He wanted everything for the families, you know. But he also did, it was also one of the other places that did have a nightclub that did serve alcoholic beverages. Mm-hmm. That and what else was it? Club 33, I think, you know, were some of the only places that you could buy alcohol. But there was alcohol available at the Disneyland Hotel because they had, you know, things for the adults to do. If you go on a Disney cruise now, there's special things that just adults can do, you know, on board the ship. My wife and I went on one of those and get away from the kids for a little while and go have a dinner, a romantic dinner, you know, in the back of the ship and everything. Same thing then. They had some things that the adults only could do because they had babysitting services and theme shows for the kids at the hotel to keep them occupied as well.
That's incredible.
Don, I wanted, because I think a lot of people see the towers and they think that was maybe the first thing that was built there. Maybe you can kind of describe what the hotel was like when it did first open.
So the hotel, the original plans for the hotel called for 650 rooms, and they were all going to be two-story, like the Garden Villa settings. I don't know if either of you remember those, but they were basically two-story wood structures. The hotel opened on October the 5th, and they had seven rooms open. It was $9 a night. Yeah. The problem that they had was that any carpenter or electrician or plumber or landscaper was working on Disneyland. And until they got that finished, which was, you know, they opened on July 17th. Well, actually the 18th, they were busy. And so they couldn't be unleashed to work on the hotel until after that. And they were way behind schedule because they wanted to open the same day or the same week. And it was actually 2.5 months later that the hotel opened. But they were all going to be those two-story garden structures. There was going to be 650 of them spread out all over the 60 acres there. But one day, Jack Rather was driving to his office in Beverly Hills, and he passed by a building that was being erected in Los Angeles called the Marie Antoinette Towers. And a gentleman named Alfred Nicholson and his business partner, Kurt Weber, Weber and Nicholson Architects, were building those towers. And Jack was in his car at a light, and he looked up and he saw that, and the idea was sprung. I don't want to build two-story things. I want to build towers. This was around 1960. So he pulled into the construction lot there. There was a trailer that they were operating out of. Alfred Nicholson's wife, Betty, was in there answering the phones and you know, paying for bills and whatever they had to do. She was the secretary for the company. And Jack knocked on the door and said, "Hi, I'm Jack Rather. Can I talk to somebody about what you're doing here?" And she said, "Yeah, we're building a 35-story tower, the Marie Antoinette Towers," which was condos or living facilities there. And he said, "I want to talk to the architects about this." To make a long story short, that's how they got the idea to build the first towers. They started building that first tower in 1961, and it opened in 1962, 11 floors. They just forgot about building two-story structures after that. Most people think that there's three towers. Well, now they just added a fourth. They added the Disney Vacation Club Tower. But let's talk, you know, 6 months ago. Most people thought there were three towers at the Disneyland Hotel. There's actually four, because the Sierra Tower, when it was first built, was half the size that it is now. And they just pasted another half right next to it. So I call that one two towers.
Oh, wow.
And that one started in 1965 and opened in 1966. The Marina Tower opened in late, like December 27th, 1969. For all practical purposes, it opened in 1970. They had the grand opening for it in May of 1970. The Bonita Tower started construction in 1977 and opened in 78. And for the life of me, I can't keep track of what they're... One of them is the Adventure Tower. One of them is the, you know, I still know them as the Marina, the Bonita, and the Sierra Tower. And when I do go there and ask for the Sierra Tower, they know what I'm talking about.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Is the Sierra Tower, is that the one that the lobby's in?
No, that was the Marina Tower.
That's the Marina Tower?
Yeah, the Sierra Tower faces out from the back of it to downtown Disney.
Okay, so that's the Adventureland Tower currently.
Okay, yeah. And the Bonita Tower, which is originally going to be called the South Tower, they named it after Jack Rather's wife, Bonita Granville Rather.
Yeah.
That faces out kind of to...
like Catella?
Yeah, yes. And the convention center, you know, if you're on that side of it, you can see out to a big parking lot. And
yeah.
Yeah, you can see the Pixar Hotel, and you can see DCA from there too.
Is that what they're calling it now, the Pixar Hotel? Shoot, I still call
Pixar.
It the Paradise.
Yeah. Yep,
I gotta get up with the times because I'm losing track.
But that time, I mean, the times are interesting, but we can go experience that. All of your knowledge of things that we can't go experience anymore is like worth so much more. I was having fun. I was sitting here. It may have looked like I wasn't paying attention. I promise you I was. I was flipping through your book as you were talking about all the towers so I could see all the different things that you were talking about. That's just incredible.
So for point of reference, the oldest building on the property now is the north half of the, I think it's the Adventure Tower.
Okay.
And you can actually walk in the hallway. It's just a little bit south of the elevators, and you can see a little step down. And that's where the two towers were joined together. So that's something that you can look for, you know, when you're on the grounds for a historical reference point. Now, I have also been led into a room that's just a little bit beyond that, where they store big tables for conventions and chairs and things, you know, when people are having a get together or a convention there. And they opened up these big doors, and you can still see the outside of the original Sierra Tower with its beautiful blue tiles. And there were a couple on the ground, and the guy said, "You can have those. Pick those up. You can have those." And he gave them to me. So
that's incredible.
But they make it a point to not peel them off. They wait for them to fall, and then they offer them. They don't want to just they won't peel them off. So I have, I think, two or three of those now as part of my collection. My collection is known as my kitchen because I never remodeled my wife's kitchen. I've bought Disney stuff instead, and she keeps saying, "My old kitchen is because you bought too much Disney stuff," you know?
too funny. So with all of the, because 60 acres, so how far did that stretch? Because the current hotel definitely is not nearly anywhere near that, because all of the things, you know, the marine and all that stuff, I'm thinking, you know, I think of current times, but I have to remember, nope, it was much, it was a much larger scale thing than back then than it is today.
Well, if you look back in time, they used to also have right across Cerritos, there was a miniature golf course. Mm. There was a driving range. There was a helicopter landing pad or heliport. And then it extended a little bit further back than where the Bonita Tower, the South Tower is today. It extended a little bit back into, there was kind of a dirt field there that ran up to a place called Wonder Bowl. And there was also the Wonderlust Hotel, the 20-unit facility that was right next to the Disneyland Hotel. I have some amazing pictures of them building the Wonderlust Hotel, and you could see old pictures of the Disneyland Hotel in the background of it. So, you know, people would say, what's that in the background there? And I said, that's the Disneyland Hotel. You know, it was that close together. But yeah, now it's primarily, you know, that hunk that's right there is, I don't even think it's 30 acres because they took over a large part of that too for Downtown Disney, like where ESPN Zone and, and all of that. The original hotel would have been right there, the pool and everything. So they've encroached upon that. I'm guessing that it's probably 25 to 30 acres now out of the original 60 that were leased.
Yeah, it's less than half. Well, because, yeah, the other thing, too, is the monorail station where it is currently for Downtown Disney. So was that where, did that move, or was that where the hotel monorail station was?
Not an inch. It's exact. Wow. It's exactly, yeah, except for the hotel moved.
Right.
In 1999, they tore out all of the original section of the hotel. That was the monorail station, the old lobby building that used to be on a street called West Street. It was 1441 West Street. The original the monorail cafe, the lounges, the Embassy and Magnolia rooms, the travel port, all of that was removed in 1999 to make way for Downtown Disney. And the monorail used to stop there. You used to walk down some stairs and you were at the shops. Mickey's Corner, you know, all of those, the shops that were right there, Neon Cactus, you know, all of those things were right there. And so, but not anymore. You get off the monorail now and you're right next to, I think, where Rainforest Cafe used to be and things like that. So,
yeah, so you still got about a 10-minute walk till you get to the hotel.
Yeah, it's a few minutes. But luckily, a lot of times when you walk back there, you have a band playing up on the bandstand or something, you know, that's there. And I got called by Imagineering not too long ago for some old pictures because they wanted to put a construction wall up around where the theaters used to be and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're going to put some old photos of what the hotel used to look like on that wall, if they haven't done it already, of what they're building to replace the theaters. And remember years ago there was Compass Books and things like, and Earl of Sandwich was right there. Yeah. So they're replacing all of that. I haven't been there since October, but I think they're well into that project as well. But that used to be hotel property. The Sierra Pool or the Olympic Pool was right there where Earl of Sandwich was, you know.
Yeah. Wasn't that the pool where they did the tryouts for the auditions for the mermaids in the Sublagoon?
Yes, sir. You better believe it. They had, I think it was 250 young ladies that auditioned. They had mermaid tails and they narrowed it down from 250 to 20, and then they narrowed it down to 15, and then I think they settled on 8. Wow. And they had auditions in 1959 and 1965. I guess one too many people that had found their way to alcohol had jumped in the submarine lagoon to try to make it out to those mermaids out in the lagoon, the submarine lagoon, because they used to have live mermaids out there.
Yep.
And one too many inebriated people, you know, had jumped over the fence and tried to swim out to a mermaid or two. So they canceled the live mermaids, you know, that were in there. So, but I thought I thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah.
I mean, that water does look nice and refreshing, but I don't. Yeah.
Especially on a hot day.
Yeah.
On a hot day. Yeah. Yeah. So I wouldn't want to have to battle that sea monster that was in there.
Right?
You know?
No. Yeah. No. Very true. So, Don, the spark that kind of got you on the path to, you know, really diving into the history and eventually writing books about the Disneyland Hotel was that encounter you had with Mike Connors, the bellhop. So after that moment, how do you even come to find all of this knowledge, get all of the different resources that you have? I mean, you just mentioned you have Disney Imagineering's coming to you because you have this wealth of knowledge of the hotel space. So how did you kind of come by this, or how did that all happen throughout the years?
Well, originally when this first started, I had to write a lot of letters or make a lot of phone calls. But then 1998, 1999 rolls around and we have the internet. And then we have eBay, you know, and then and then I was, you know, staying up till 1 or 2 in the morning bidding on Disneyland hotel items from eBay. That's where my wife's kitchen comes into play, because, you know, I would be making these exorbitant bids on Disneyland hotel items. And then what happened a lot of times was I would bid on something and win it, and somebody would say, oh, by the way, I have, you know, 4 other things from the Disneyland hotel, and I don't really want to put them on eBay. So if you want to buy those too, I'll sell those to you. And then when the first book came out, which was 2005, which was the 50th anniversary of Disneyland, I put the book out and I had everybody, which was awesome, coming to me saying, oh, you know, I worked at the hotel from 1965 to 1975. I've got this stack of pictures. You want copies of them? But the greatest impetus or the greatest thing was meeting Christopher Rather. He wrote the introduction to the book. Jack Rather's son, who took over the company when Jack died in 1984 and handled the sale of Rather Company to Disney in 1988, 1989. He just opened up his vault of material to me. One thing was, he called me once and I was in my car. And of course, I pulled over to the side of the street because you're not supposed to talk on your cell phone while you're in your car. But anyway, and he said, hey, Don, I've got this storage vault in Hollywood. I haven't been there in 40 years. You want to go take a look? You know, and that was another thing I said, is this a trick question? You know, of course I want to go take a look. He said, there might be a couple of things that are in that storage vault that, you know, you would find interesting, because that was all their business adventures. There was Lone Ranger, Lassie. Jack owned oil wells, radio stations, TV stations. Anyway, to make a long story short, I tend to ramble. I apologize.
We love it.
my wife and I made arrangements, because, again, we're in near San Francisco. We made arrangements to fly down to LAX early, early in the morning, and we went to a place called Hollywood Vaults. And it's a temperature controlled, so it's freezing cold in there, and humidity controlled. And they have these actual vaults that you open. And I told my wife, Lori, I said, if I find 10 things in here that I haven't seen before, this will be a successful trip. But I'm not really counting on, you know, finding a lot of stuff, because I've got a ton of stuff. I scanned 1,700 photographs and 22 movies that the Rathers had filmed, 3 of which were Jack Rather bringing his camera to Disneyland on July 17th, 1955, a special guest of Walt Disney, in riding in the parade on a 1908 International vehicle right behind Walt Disney, and Jack brought his movie camera. I have that footage, and it's in color, beautifully preserved Kodak color, and I have all 3 spools of that film of that venture. But he also filmed in 1959, in June of 1959, when the monorail opened and the Matterhorn opened and the submarines opened. And then he filmed in when they were breaking ground for, you know, the towers and stuff. So there's 22 films and 1,700 photographs that I had. 45 were with Walt Disney that nobody had ever seen before. I brought those to the Walt Disney Family Museum. I got a call one night, and they said, Ron and Diane would like to see you. And I was like on cloud 9, because it's about a 45-minute drive. I brought my middle son with me, who was playing minor football at the time. He was, I think, 10 or 11 years old. I brought him with me. I got there. They said, we have a special room, and Ron and Diane are waiting for you, Diane Disney and Ron Miller. I went up there, and I brought the photographs. I brought the footage and my son. And I'm showing her these, and then I show her the footage of the opening day, and she has me stop it at this one particular spot, and it froze Walt as he's just about to walk to the microphone to dedicate Disneyland, and she honestly had a tear in her eye, and she said, I cannot imagine a more happy moment in his life than right then. So in that frame of film I have possibly captured. I didn't capture because I didn't take the film, but I have it in my possession of Walt, one of Walt's happiest moments of his life, you know, about to dedicate this and that. And you can see it by looking at the look on his face in the picture. But the really cool thing was that Ron Miller, as you know, was a former professional football player. And so my son is only wanting to talk to him, you know, because and he's a tight end or receiver. And Ron Miller was a tight end and receiver for the Rams. And they're over in the corner, you know, going over football plays and everything. And he looks at me and he says, finally, somebody comes here that wants to meet me and talk to me. You know, they all want to talk to Diane. And, you know, this guy wants to talk to me, Aaron. Here you go. You know, here's a play we used. And it was just really cool. Another just magical moment. So, you know, so while I've never gotten to quit my day jobs over these books, you know, the writing of these books, because if you ever want to make a dollar an hour, write a book. But the people I've gotten to meet and the experiences, you know, the people that people have told me, the memories that these books evoke or just the wonderful people like you guys. I get to meet you guys and talk on your podcast, and this thrills me, you know. That there's no dollar amount I can put on that, you know. It's just it's just been well worth it. And and I am saving up for my wife's kitchen, so she will get hers as well. But you know, it's just been a fantastic ride. And I'm working on a third book. I have a book on the 60s, the most dynamic decade in the hotel history. And I have that with a graphic artist right now working on that. And that one is going to have, I have to split it into two books. It has 1,400 photographs.
Wow.
You know, because I got to meet Al Nicholson, the architect. He passed away at 97, 3 years ago, but I had 10 or 11 visits with him. He lived in Malibu, and his business partner, Kurt Weber, they gave me stacks of photographs and blueprints and permits and documents. And, you know, so it just exploded. And all these people, you know, saying, I've got these slides, you know, I found 700 slides at University of California at Santa Barbara. I found 400 slides at the library in San Francisco. People just reach out to me and say, you know, you're welcome to come make copies of these, you know. And now I have like 17 tubs of items from the hotel. We had a guy came through one time from Van Eaton Auctions, and we spread our stuff out, and he said, I can get you $1.5 million for this stuff. And you know, my wife is saying, wow, I could build a really nice kitchen for $1.5 million, you know. And I said, I said, to tell you the truth, I can't part with this, you know. There may come a day, but this is some really cool stuff to me, and I'm hanging on to it, so.
Well, and the fact that you have all of these really amazing and cool stories to go along with all of the different things, you know, the fact that you picked up parts of the, you know, the blue tile while you were touring around the hotel with one of the cast members, that, you know, like there's their memories. Yeah, they're super cool things, but you also have these amazing memories and stories to tie along with it too, like going to meet Diane Miller, and you know, that's incredible. That's amazing.
Oh yeah, that was a special night.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. Well, that's what drew me to your book. I only have one, the first one, the early years, 1954 and through 1988, and that's what drew me to it, was all of the photos. Well, now I know exactly, like, because I was like, how does someone how do you get all these? Because there's just so many, and they're beautiful photos too. So thank you for doing all this.
Yeah, you have the softbound. There was an original hardbound version too, and this one that you have has almost all new photographs. Because through the years, I got better photographs of things that I was depicting. But the hardbound one, I mean, I sometimes see that for $500 in Amazon.
Yeah. Oh, really?
You know, because there's not many of it. And I still have like 30 or 40 copies of that, you know, of that original hardbound book. But that one has much more.
Oh, there you go.
Much more black and white in that one than color, like the one that you're holding. So, and the 60s one will even have more than that, and they're almost all in color. So,
it's incredible. Yeah. With love, you know, with being someone who really loves learning the history of Disneyland and, you know, the family and the hotel and all that, the photos are just priceless. Because it's one thing to read descriptions of the things, but it's a totally different thing to be able to see it. And that's what I really enjoyed about, you know, different shows on Disney Plus, which, for those of you that don't know, Don was on the behind the attraction of the Disneyland Hotel. But it's just, it's amazing because it comes to life and it helps those of us that didn't get to experience it in a different, you know, almost not as good, but, you know, as close as we're going to be able to get. And I love that you collected all of these things and that you put this all together so and shared it with the world to be able to see and experience all of this as well. That's just incredible.
Guess where they got all those that footage and the pictures on the behind the attraction episode?
Yeah.
95% of those were from me, and I was very happy to do so.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just that one haul alone of you going and finding those 1,700 pictures and 22 films is just...
Oh, yeah.
Incredible. I mean, that's amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Where can people find your books, Don?
Mm-hmm.
I have a publisher called the Old Mill Press, oldmillpress.com. And that they have my second book, which was the book on the 50s, which is a softbound. And they have the softbound version of the one that you're holding. For the hardbound version, I only have, I think, less than 30 left. And that's at magicalhotel.com. Magicalhotel.com. Yeah. And I think I have less than a box left. I'm saving one box for my kids and grandkids when I have them, and I'll never open or distribute those. Those are first edition. Some are signed by Chris Rather and Alfred Nicholson, and I'm saving those. But I do have, I think, 30 or so left of the hardbound book at magicalhotel.com. And I'm also working on getting the third book, the 60s book, through the Old Mill Press as well.
Yeah.
Very cool. Very, very cool. Well, I highly recommend it. It's kind of not quite coffee book sized, but it's also not just like, you know, like a chapter book. It's a nice happy medium between those two things. You've got all the photos, mm-hmm. but you also have all the information.
Mm-hmm.
Just incredible.
Yeah.
Just incredible.
Well, thank you. Yeah.
Don, there's a million different things that we could go over, but is there anything in particular that you would like to talk about before we wrap up?
I would love to get Jack and Bonita Rather a window on Main Street. I think they're well deserving. In 2011, I had lobbied Disney for a number of years to get them to be made Disney legends. And one day I get this email saying, you can stop sending your cards and your emails and your phone calls. Jack and Bonita Rather have been named Disney legends. You're invited to D23 to speak, and they're going to be presented with their Legends Awards there. And I was thrilled with that they became legends. But I think it's time too that they got a window on Main Street.
Yeah.
And I know the perfect place for it over at the Marceline Motel in that little cubby area over there by the lockers and stuff.
Yeah.
That would be the perfect spot. And they could put something like Breeders of Fine Collie Dogs for the reference to Lassie, you know.
Yeah.
Because they always have a little catchphrase about the person.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, and I think it would just be perfect. And I'd love to go there and help them dedicate that window, you know, to Jack and Bonita Rather. That's kind of like, I heard you before talking about your bucket list of going to Walt's apartment and things like that, which is also on my list. But anyway, that's another bucket list thing for me is to get Jack and Bonita a window on Main Street.
That is kind of wild when you think of it that they don't have one yet. Cause very deserving. Very deserving.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's it. That's it. I mean, I could probably talk to you guys all night, but I ramble and I apologize, but
no, don't apologize whatsoever. We love hearing all the stories and learning all the things. So don't apologize whatsoever. And in fact, I mean, you've got so much knowledge that we'll have to reach out and have you back on sometime in the future.
And
so we
can talk more. Let your listeners know if they ever want a historical walking tour of the hotel. I'd be happy to give one. You know, I'd be happy to go. I've done it twice. And one time we had to tell people that we've got too many people. And another time there was like 35 or 40 and it was perfect. I'd love to, you know, bring a big bucket of paraphernalia and walk people through the history. Because I know a lot of cool spots that are there. You know,
I'd love that.
Yeah, Yeah, so I'd love to do that. So anyway,
we're gonna have to like organize a thing. Like the Sweep Spot and DL Weekly podcasts are gonna have to organize this, and then our listeners can sign up and join for that. That sounds
incredible. Yeah, that would be
limited,
fun.
Obviously, so it's not too many people. So that's one question I have, because the hotel currently versus everything that had been, we've already learned how much land it lost. Is there really, aside from the towers, is there really anything currently there today that was part of the hotel in its heyday? Probably nothing since when it first opened, because it sounds like it completely changed since it first opened. Wow.
Every original piece was torn out. Somebody said there was an original orange tree from the orange grove that was there, but I don't, I've walked all over there and I can't find it. The oldest thing there is now from 1962, 7 years after the hotel opened. And that's the north end of the, what did we say? The Adventure Tower?
Oh yes. The Adventure Tower.
That's that's the oldest building on the property. The oldest structure on the property. Everything else was taken out in 1999. And they told me, I remember talking to somebody at Walt Disney Imagineering. They said, we couldn't wait to get the bulldozers in there. And I was like, oh, well, thanks, you know.
You're like, don't tell me that.
So, but anyway.
Wow. That's amazing. Because I was wondering, like, because there's that little, like, geyser that's kind of back by the Frontierland Tower. So I'm like, is that maybe, you know, like, are there little but yeah, it's all switched around, huh?
Yeah, that was even put in after the falls were removed as a throwback, because they had one back in the 70s as well. But that tower wasn't there till 1978. So, you know, that was the last tower.
Still more current.
No, the one that they're built now is the last tower built. But yeah. So nothing left. They even took the koi fish out and put them in a park somewhere in a city down there and stuff. So everything's gone.
Yeah,
that's crazy how much has changed throughout the years.
Absolutely.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, Don, we always like to wrap up our time with our guests with kind of asking a question, and it's kind of just you can pick whatever you want. It doesn't have to be real, but if you could work at Disneyland or the Disneyland Hotel, what would you like to do? The sky's the limit, though, so you can make up your own role if you would like.
I would like to be a person that welcomes new cast members, and I would like to deliver presentations on the history and why that place is important and why they need to make people feel special. Not only the hotel, but I have a fairly good working knowledge of the history of Disneyland and a fairly good collection of Disneyland paraphernalia as well. So I would like to have a job where, you know, like an orientation for new hires, that I get to be the one that goes over the history. And then when that's done, you know, during the day, I'd like to show footage and stuff to people that want to sit out on the lawn and with a drink in hand or a burger or a sandwich, and show old footage that I have or something of the hotel from the 50s and the 60s and answer people's questions on that. Those aren't real jobs. They don't exist, but that would be my dream.
They should.
Yeah, that would be my that would just add a little extra touch, in my opinion, of Disney magic, you know, history magic.
I think so, because I think there's a lot of people out there that are very interested, you know, are maybe newly interested or have been interested in history for a long time, but it's hard to find some resources. I know I was with Disney Plus, I got super excited that they started releasing kind of more of the history side of things. And I'm like, yes, can they keep this content coming? I'm sure the average Disney Plus viewer is not watching behind the attraction or the Imagineering story or whatever. So I hope that even though numbers for that stuff, you know, aren't probably as high as whatever the newest show or movie is, but I hope that they keep that stuff keeps becoming available. Cause it's like we were talking about, it's priceless, cause it's stuff that you can't experience anymore. And if we don't share it and talk about it, it's just going to fade and people are going to forget about it.
That's the history of the company. Mm-hmm. You know, those are the things that, you know, people my age grew up with, you know, and that provides us with memories of, again, happy times and things. Mm-hmm. Sunday nights in front of the TV watching The Wonderful World of Disney or The Wonderful World of Color, you know, yeah. And those were, you know, time spent with my family. And yeah, absolutely. They need to keep that stuff alive and vibrant.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Well, Don, thank you so, so much for your time this evening and for sharing all of just probably the tip of the iceberg of your knowledge of the Disneyland Hotel specifically and of Disneyland in general. So we really, really appreciate it. And that was incredible.
Oh, believe me, it's been my pleasure. I've absolutely loved this. And I thank you so much for having me on here.
Yes. Yeah, thank you, Don.
Looks like we're coming in for a landing, gang. But please stay listening until trivia comes to a stop. And then yous can walk to the nearest exit. Thanks for listening to the 8th Wonder of the World, Dia Weekly.
Welcome back to Trivia Land. How do we feel about tonight? You feeling pretty good about yourselves? Like you had all the right answers?
I don't think we had all of the right answers, but I'm feeling pretty good.
I feel better than past weeks, yes.
All right.
Trivia Land's a tricky place to be in.
It is.
Well, you did. There's a lot more green on the board than past weeks have had. You did pretty well tonight. So let's find out how you did, huh? Your first four questions submitted by listener Kayla Jean and 2.5-year-old son. As we all know, Dole is the sponsor of the Enchanted Tiki Room, and Teresa's a fan of Dole Whip. What year did they sign on as a sponsor for the attraction, and what sponsor did they replace? You answered 1986 or 1981 and TWA. The correct answer that I was looking for was 1976 and replacing United Airlines.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah.
We were on the right path.
You were so close.
Yeah.
5 and 10 years off and right mode of transport, wrong specific company.
Okay.
That's pretty good, though.
Yeah. Your second question. Who composed the songs for the Tiki Room? Both of you very promptly and confidently saying that was the Sherman Brothers. The correct answer that I was looking for was the Sherman Brothers.
I was going to say, if you say something else, we're going to have to do some researching here.
Well, they technically didn't compose all the songs in there.
Mm-hmm.
But okay.
We're going to let it go.
The main song.
Yes.
The main song.
The Tiki Room song.
Yep. Your third regular round question. What is the runtime of the Tiki Room show? And I gave you a minute grace period. Lynn, you said 17 minutes, 30 seconds. Teresa, you said 17 minutes. Originally just over 17 minutes. It's now 15 minutes, 36 seconds, according to Wikipedia.
They've taken
15
away.
Minutes, according to Disney.com. And some sources say between 12 and 13 minutes.
They've taken away Tiki from us.
Yeah.
Thank goodness.
They have shaved Tiki time.
They've shaved Tiki time. Yes.
All right.
Your fourth and final regular round question. How many audio animatronics are in the show? Lynn saying 72 and Teresa saying 225. The correct answer that I was looking for, including birds, flowers, and Tiki performers, that includes the walls and the drummers mm-hmm. and all over the place, the answer I wanted was 225.
Oh!
Yes, we'll have to count them next time we're there.
Wow,
all
okay.
Of them.
That's
yes.
Way more than I thought. Okay.
It might take us longer than the 15 minutes to be able to count all of them,
yeah.
Find all of them, but...
And your bonus question from me, because I was just having fun researching everything and double-checking stuff and enjoying the ride. The audio animatronics were so incredible by 1963 standards, a Barker bird was stationed outside the attraction to draw huge crowds and pique the interest of parkgoers. What was his name? Both of you saying Juan, Jose's cousin. And the correct answer that I was looking for was... Juan, Jose's cousin. High five.
Oh, the random
Tag's not here,
things.
I'll do it.
Teresa did good.
That stick in our brains.
Wow.
Well, listeners, how did you do listening at home? How do you feel about how Lynn and Teresa did? Do you think you've got some great questions that can really stump them next time? If you've got that perfect question and you'd like to hear it on the air, feel free to send that in to us at trivia@dlweekly.net.
Well, we will be back next week with more Disneyland news and information.
Until then, go out and enjoy the parks.
Please remain seated until the podcast comes to a complete stop and the doors have opened. Then collect your belongings, watch your head, and step carefully from the episode. On behalf of all of our crew, thanks for traveling with us, and we hope you have a happy and memorable visit here at DL Weekly.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Wake up to a delicious morning with your favorite McDonald's breakfast sandwiches, now just $2, only in the app. Choose from a bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit, sausage McMuffin, or bacon, egg, and cheese McGriddles, just $2, only in the app. That's a deal as irresistible as the sandwiches themselves. Plus, you'll save time by ordering ahead in the app. Offer valid one time per day from July 29th through September 1st at participating McDonald's. Must opt in to rewards.